My name is Elijah Hatch, and I'm running for the Weld County Commissioner at Large seat.
Appreciate you joining the program here today. And this is a county commissioner seat, is that correct?
That is correct.
At large. So is this because of the new census that you guys grew so much that you had to add another person, or did somebody step down or resign? Or I guess, why is it at large, if I may ask?
So actually neither. Typically in the Weld County charter, we have three districts and two at-large positions. So we have an official panel of five county commissioners.
Greeley always catches my eye for a number of reasons. One is I used to do a magazine there in a former life with the Lee Enterprises, I think, owns the newspaper there, or did back in the day. And,
yes, sir.
Of course, the stockyards, which is just a sight to be seen. If anybody who's ever seen a cattle stockyard, that is a sight that you'll never forget. And then the other part about Greeley is it has the best Indian food in the nation. That great Indian food restaurant in downtown Greeley. Oh, just delicious. And they actually opened a second one in Fort Collins, those brothers. But talk to me a little bit about Greeley, your background a little bit. Hey, have you guys succeeded to Wyoming? We got to talk about that too. That's a fun story. Senator Cook on to talk about that.
Yes, sir.
But talk to me a little bit about your background in Greeley and everything.
Sure. I actually moved to the Greeley area with my family back in 1989. My family's actually from the Deep South, and my parents have always been involved in the agricultural side of America. So my dad had a fascination with the West, so we slowly migrated through southern Georgia, central Texas, and then made our way up to southern Colorado. We spent some time down in the San Luis Valley and then officially moved up here in 1989. So I have lived here for the majority of my life.
Your background, agriculture then?
Yes, sir.
Any energy, any technology, anything like that, or just straight up ag?
Well, it's funny you say that. I grew up in an ag-based family, farming, ranching, and whatnot. We had a heavy involvement with horses throughout my youth. And step back a little bit. I remember I was also in FFA. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Future Farmers of America.
Absolutely.
Future Farmers of America.
Absolutely love that. We support it every year. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal in our family. But during that program, you end up taking a certification course through the state of Colorado for a private pesticide applicator's license. And I failed it. I failed it horribly. And the funny thing is now that is my given profession, is applying pesticides and herbicides.
You know, and so, without the failure, you probably would have never went back into it.
I never thought I would. So.
Hey, sometimes, and I don't know if this is a guy thing, but sometimes getting knocked on your butt, that's the best way to get them to do it.
Yes, sir. No, that's very true.
Well, it's the challenge.
If you want me to do something, tell me no.
That's exactly right. It's just, that's the same theme and the mentality and the behavior and et cetera. So,
yes, sir.
The crude life, we've got obviously oil, gas following. We're on radio stations in a lot of different ag areas too. So there's obviously a lot of crossover when you're talking about oil and gas and agriculture, whether it's the rigs on the property, whether it's the diesel that the farmers need to, put in their tractors, or the propane that's needed to dry their crops. There's all kinds of coexistence and collaboration and et cetera. Do you have any sort of a collaboration or background? Because Greeley is pretty heavy energy and pretty heavy ag.
Yes, sir. No, it's funny you say that. I do have quite the background in all of it. Out of high school, I was always interested in technology. So I started pursuing a tech degree, which I didn't finish because I did enter into a career. And I helped develop some of the first wireless networks for point-to-point wireless broadcasting across northern Colorado. And we're able to get broadband internet to some of those rural locations that didn't have any other options at the time.
No kidding.
So, yes, sir. From there, I did go into the family business, like I talked about earlier, which is herbicide applications. And we were able to step into the oil and gas marketplace, offering herbicide and pesticide applications on oil and gas sites. So we've been doing that for the better part of 15 years now, and have developed some wonderful relationships. We do a lot of now different work within the oil and gas industry. We're definitely not what you would call a roustabout, but we can provide many services when it comes to the needs of the different producers.
Oh, no kidding that your business is even, I guess, you know, put a finger or toe in there, huh?
Yes, sir.
Oh, that's great. That's fabulous. And I mean that because if you're running for office, I think people need to be well-rounded. I think they need to like, I honestly believe that if you're over the age of 25 and you've never worked in a restaurant, you shouldn't be allowed in one. And of course, all the servers and cooks in America totally agree with me on that. And I'm a former server and a cook, so I agree with that statement as I say it. And there's a lot of truth behind that. You know, we were talking a little bit about real estate, and I used to tell people all the time when I was selling real estate, I did it for a couple of years primarily as research for the publishing industry, but I would say I'm a homeowner, and honestly, I wouldn't go with a realtor unless they were a homeowner. It's, you know, kind of got to talk the talk a little bit. So I find that is a good quality to have in politicians as well. Otherwise, I think they can get out of touch pretty quick. And, you know, you're being brought in here because you're running for Weld County Commission, and there's some issues down there. You know, you've got a governor that's not very kind to the oil and gas industry, to where he says war on oil and gas. And then got your county that wanted to succeed in going to Wyoming and made some national news. And where do you stand in all this? Are you a peacekeeper? Are you a blue dog Democrat? Are you a right-wing Republican? Just do you, because county, I don't, do county commissioners, do you guys even do party affiliation?
Yes, sir.
Oh, you
yes,
do?
Sir.
Okay.
Definitely party affiliation.
I didn't even do my homework. I just, I saw that you were running and I thought, Weld County, we got to bring them on.
So to answer that question, I am a Republican.
Okay.
You know, let the public decide, you know, where they feel I fit into the scenario there is as where I lean. But, you know, I am a proponent for oil and gas. It's been excellent to my family, and I'm a big supporter of it. But in that same token, I also own a renewable energy, solar energy company, where we can build basically any solar product as a solar contractor. You know, whether somebody just needs a basic solar system on their RV all the way up to a full-size, you know, 3, 4, 5 megawatt solar farm. But what I have learned over the years is those industries really do go hand in hand. There's a lot of symmetry there. You can't go onto an oil and gas site today without finding some sort of solar product that's helping generate electricity to run the electronics on that site.
And that is a vice versa, hand. And I would even go a step further because I know in a lot of solar panels, there's even certain types of coal that are having to be put in there. And so now
it's funny to say that the polycrystostylene panels are made from oil and gas hydrocarbons.
So here we're talking about, you know, the solar working with some of the sensors and some of the monitoring on the oil and gas sites, but they can't be done because we like to say renewables ain't doable without fossil fuelables. And then you even throw in the coal leg in there. I think that, you know, like I honestly tell people when it comes to coal, There's three things I would look at when it comes to coal. Number one, the way they automated it, meaning it used to be, I just got off the phone with someone from West Virginia, and they knew exactly what I was talking about. The coal, the side of the mountain used to employ like 25 to 35 employees, and now it's down to 6. So that's a lot of automation that took out a lot of different jobs. Now, people can argue up and down whether that's good or bad, and that's not what I'm getting into. But the energy industry is going that way too. Now,
Absolutely. When
you take a look at what that means, well, that means that coal's going to be reinvented. Oil and gas might even be reinvented a little bit. And I go back to coal because I don't want to speculate too much into oil and gas because we're still trying to figure things out there. But coal, it's automated. They've gone from 30 workers down to 6. We still need it. They still use it. China, I think 40 to 60% of its grid is still coal. I was looking the other day, and I see California, I think, still uses some. So, I mean, it's still being used, so it's not going to go anywhere. But renewables need it for those solar panels, but also water desalination. I think coal's going to come through with filtering water. That's where I think it's going to save us. But anyway, I just wanted to, I guess, give a very long explanation about some of the coexistence and collaboration that I see with the energy industry. You've got a solar company, huh? That should be very interesting. I'd like to revisit that maybe at a different time to talk about that a little bit, because that's, I think solar's got a future. I'm not a big fan of wind, and we can talk about wind energy if you want to talk about wind energy. In fact, do you have a stance on wind energy?
Oh, you know, that's a tough one. It produces energy, but, you know, it comes at a great cost. It's one of the higher costing energy producers, and the leftovers from that product are, you know, difficult to, what do you do with them when you're done? So, you know, it's that's a very tough one. But on that same token, I also profit from wind energy, as we do herbicide applications around wind turbines.
Yeah, it's to me, I think wind has gotten a little too political. I do believe the Amish were more and are more economical and efficient when it comes to wind energy, because if you can put up a wind turbine in a weekend with your neighbors and get water and power your pole barn, that's pretty good.
Absolutely.
And we haven't gotten that with the wind. You know, wind has got some serious problems, and it really gets impacted by agriculture the most. And,
yes,
you know, from the reclamation that you're talking about, Germany, they had to fire up the coal plants again, and they found out the insect population is starting to be depleted by 60 to 70% in some of the areas where the wind turbines are. You've got reliability issues. And I'm not trying to pick on wind. I'm just saying, listen, it's gotten political and it's just not there, and they haven't hit the milestones that they've set out. Solar just needs a terawatt of storage and it'll be fine. It just needs to hit that, you know, that honestly, that's all. You tell me, you're the solar expert. That's really all that's missing, right? Is that big storage battery.
Well, you know, storage is a component, and the expense associated with that. There's definitely some hurdles. You know, if you're trying to build a new property that doesn't have electricity to it, and you're weighing the balance, whether you want to go off-grid solar or have the grid built out to your home, you know, you can be looking at a cost of anywhere from $20,000 to $60,000 to be able to get that grid link to your property by putting up, you know, 10, 15 poles and getting the secure line to yourself. Or you invest in solar and you figure out what your estimated wattage usage is, and you're going to end up spending $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 to be able to get that same product up front. So, you know, it's going to be cheaper generally to get into it if you're going to go directly on the grid, but then you're trying to weigh the, you know, the options of your long-term investment and what's going to be my return on that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, maintenance,
and a lot
too.
Of the times you're just trying to get a house built and get a property going. So you're kind of looking for the cheaper option.
Yeah. And reliable too.
Exactly.
You know, reliable. Cause you know, when you start talking off the grid is great, but there are reliability issues, and you know, there's maintenance issues, and sometimes they're not cheap, and number of different things. And you know, if you're a government, you want to make sure people have got lights that turn on and water that runs. You know, at the end of the day, you can be as mean as you want, but that's the reason they say, and one of the reasons why they do what they do. So where do you feel government's role is, I guess? You know, you mentioned you're a Republican. You're in Colorado, which is a pretty blue state in some of the city areas. You get out in the country,
yes,
it's
sir.
Not. You know, Greeley, the Tea Party might be a little liberal down there, so I don't know. I'm just kidding. Where do you stand on some of these different issues in government as far as the role and things along those lines?
I am definitely a fan of limited government. I believe in limiting terms. People should not be spending their entire life governing. They really should have real-world experience. Go to a government role if that's what they choose to do, but then go back to normal life, as we call it, where we actually have to have a job and do something productive.
Yeah. Term limits, I don't hear much about that anymore.
No, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah, there's a lot of advantages to term limits. I know when I was a Ute, I guess, the thing that I always heard against it being from North Dakota was the clout factor and everything. And I'm seeing where I'd rather not have the clout. I'd rather have the money go get spread around instead of the same people getting it over and over again. And I think that's what happens. And I'm not talking about North Dakota. This is everywhere. So that's I'm not picking on anybody. But, you know, a lot of Republicans, of course, they want to go in. They want to clean up the swamp, and they want to do a number of different things. We're coming fresh off of a COVID where the government was handed out money like candy to a lot of people that probably like getting that candy, you know, that maybe never got that candy before. And, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of business people, and, you know, there was a lot of different changes being made where now a Subway franchise is considered the same as Betty Lou's Sub Corner Shop, you know, that type of thing. So where are we going with the subsidies and industry and the government picking winners and losers? Because the county does that too.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate because that's not their job.
No, the county, from my understanding, is primarily roads.
Yes, sir.
And water and that type of thing, yeah.
That's correct.
Counties have gotten into economic development. They've gotten into renewable rebates and all kinds of different things. Where's Greeley at? I mean, what's Greeley's top issue?
The city of Greeley, I couldn't even try to speculate on that.
Okay.
Although it's within the county, they do have their own jurisdiction and things that they allow within the city limits. And, you know, if they want to incite different types of businesses, they do have their own programs. The county, I do know, has they've had some programs where they have given away money to different businesses. You had to apply for it and show that you had an economic downturn, and they would award you up to a certain dollar amount.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a tough call. Yes, you want to help the population. You want to make sure that everybody is able to keep functioning and, you know, work towards a common goal and getting through this. But, you know, when is enough enough? At some point, people are, I mean, and we're seeing it now. I mean, as a business owner, we are having a hell of a time finding employees. People either A, don't want to work, or B, it seems that no matter what's offered, it's not enough. And it's well above, you know, anything close to minimum wage, but the competition has become so great for the same people that it's a wage war.
And the reason I wanted to approach the question like this was because, you know, for a year there was a lot of essential workers and minimum wage type employees that were getting that extra pandemic money, so they weren't working, and that really hurt a lot of business owners. But at the same token, there were a lot of business owners that were getting money that they didn't have employees for. So they were essentially doing the same thing that they were demonizing the minimum wage people for doing. It's just
the fraud's unreal on both sides.
Yeah, it's just on a different level is all. So I guess, yeah, so the question, I guess, for existential energy here from the 5,000-foot view is how do you get Greeley? How do I get the crude life? How do we get these people out of apathy and back into entrepreneurism and back into workism and just feel good about yourselfism?
You know, that is the million-dollar question.
It really is. So if you've got it, you got the election wrapped up.
I don't have the answers. I truly wish I did, but unfortunately, I don't have the answers.
I do think that is going to be one of the big issues that people are going to want answers for is what is the next step out of the either are we going to get on the government, you know, teat for the rest of our lives or for the next 5 years? Or are we going to stop everybody and get back to that fair market again?
Well, and it may come down to personal decisions of, are you happy, you know, living off somebody else and being told what you can and cannot do and what you are allowed to buy? And this is your budget. You know, you're never going to have nice things, but you can have X, Y, and Z. Or do you actually want to set your own life standards and work for yourself and, you know, create something beneficial more than what you have now? If you choose that, then Yeah, you're choosing to do more than, like you say, just suck off the government teat.
What are your top issues you're hearing from people as you go and engage with them through your campaign?
Well, the campaign just started. We're about 6 days into it.
Oh, boy, this is hot off the press here. Boy, this was, you guys responded quick to my response. Okay, good.
Thank you, sir. So you are my first interview.
All right. Well,
I guess, page.
So I guess to answer your question, let's see, are we heading towards socialism or no, I'm just kidding. That last question I had about how either we, would you tell us either we're all going to get on the government teat or let's not get on it, you know? Some days I feel like that. Like, I don't care what ideology we live in. Just let's just live in it. Can we try that? So,
well, I would be an extremist when it comes to being against socialism. I am, you know, I can't even describe into words potentially how against it I am, because I have experienced the American dream coming from basically nothing and building these businesses to being, you know, multi-million-dollar corporations and becoming, you know, decently successful. And I know it can be done, but I've also experienced the shortfalls and, you know, the hard points that come along with that of, you know, not getting paid, making sure that everybody else does. I'm always the first one to do without, to make sure that everybody else has what they need, to make sure that they are taken care of. Because if the people that are doing the jobs or working for you are not taken care of, they're not going to come back. So, you know, I'm willing to suffer to make sure that they're taken care of, because I believe in the dream and I believe in the end goal. So that's, you know, as opposite of socialism as there is.
You know, one of the things at Crude Life is we're not a political program, but, you know, we do have policymakers on and we do educational awareness type videos like this, you know. And for me personally, I tell people, listen, I'm an old school, what they call a Goldwater Republican, which is government stay out of my checkbook, government stay out of my personal life, but I'll gladly pay for roads and schools and, you know, those types of things, which is, you know, there's certain things that everybody uses in a community. Even if your kids go to a private school, there's enough people that use a public school to where they can even see the value of that type of a thing. So now I think they call those people libertarians. That's what I think, you know, like if you're an old Goldwater, you're almost labeled all the way to the libertarian side of things, you know, and it's a different time we live in where everything is politicized and our science is politicized now, you know, consensus science versus actual science. The HIPAA laws are completely gone. You've got governments trying to put mandate of vaccines on different people. It's very difficult to have civilized conversations with people because there's so many triggers out there and so many experts with their opinion and all kinds of different things. And I wish you luck through the campaign because yeah, it's tough to have conversations these days, you know?
It is. And stay friends afterwards.
Are you guys getting donations? I guess I imagine you are. Have you got a website for donations or?
I do. I do have a website for donations, but it's a little bit condescending in the fact that I am more than happy to pay for my own campaign. I don't want anybody to have the wrong idea that I owe anybody favors, that I've been bought and paid for. I'm not for sale. So, while, you know, we're happy to take contributions and we will put them to good use, this campaign is not about money. And I'm not looking to serve the community for a paycheck. So I actually have intent of my first year of service, if elected, to give that money back to the county. And I do only say the first year because if an election becomes hard for my businesses, you know, I may need something to live on. But yeah, I don't intend on taking money from the county. I actually want to serve the people and do what's right.
Was there something that caused you to run? Triggered you to run, I guess?
Triggers. You know, people ask me all the time why I want to run and why I want to put myself through this. And yeah, you know, I don't really. It's not something that really drives me is to run, to be a politician. I don't have this great need to be a politician. I don't even like the term of being called a politician. But what I do feel the need for is to fight what we have, because one of my favorite quotes is, the world is run by those that show up. And right now, the people that are showing up are, well, they're kind of idiots. So if we don't do something now and step up and actually get into this game and start putting our two cents in and making sure that we can keep and in what we hold valuable, then our entire way of life is going to change. And, you know, sometimes change is good, sometimes it's not. But there are a few things that I would like to keep and make sure they stay the same.
Do you have an example of maybe something you wouldn't mind changing in Colorado?
Oh, well, let's see. I do love my guns. I've always loved my guns, and my guns have never hurt a single soul. But that's one of my hobbies. I like to go out and shooting. I teach my children gun safety. And, you know, I'm not a fan of the red flag gun law. And I don't know if you're familiar with that or not, but...
I am not. I'm not a gun owner. Okay. So all this gun debate and rhetoric is just white noise to me, because I'm a knife guy and a bow and arrow guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Apparently, I like my kills to be real personal. Yes.
To each their own. Absolutely.
Right. That's a whole different seat on the couch. Yes.
Yes, sir.
Therapy session there. But no, what's this red flag law?
So the red flag law has given way to anybody can make an accusation against somebody else, you know, egregious or not, based saying that there may be some mental instability or something along those lines. And law enforcement is then obliged to come into your home and remove your weapons from your person or your home or anywhere that you may have availability from them. And then a hearing date is set after that for them to decide whether that is legal or not.
Interesting. And this is already a law?
Yes.
So I do have a question then, and I don't know if you know the answer to this, but okay, let's say that I call the authorities and say, I think you're a little bit of a Looney Tunes, and mm-hmm. So they go through this, and you go through the testing and all everything, and takes a month of your life or whatever the heck you got to go through, and then you pass and everything's fine. And I just don't like you. I just want to get mad at you because you stole my girlfriend in high school, you know? What happens to me? I'm the guy who narked you off, ruined your life for a good month, possibly then after, depending on how small the town is.
There is no recourse. So, there can never be a recourse on a whistleblower.
Okay, this is where we need to figure out how to change some of these laws where the whistleblower, you know, because we live in a day and age where anonymous clicking and clacking has got to go away.
Yes, sir.
And I don't know what the answer is. This is why I'm not trying to be political here, but when you started describing this red law, this red flag law, when you can start being subjective about someone else's mental health, that's a red flag for me.
Well, here's an example. I don't know if you're familiar with our Sheriff Reams, excellent gentleman. He has been on the news for the red flag law. Some of the inmates in his jail have tried to utilize that against him.
Of course. Absolutely. You know, I'd do the same thing if I was the inmate. Absolutely.
But that's the exact scenario that you're talking about.
Totally. That's why I'm saying I can't believe that something like this went through. But that's today's laws are very short-sighted laws. There's a lot of these. And I don't mean to pick on this red flag one. It's more of the formula and the template. It's becoming more of these go narc on your neighbor type things. And I don't like that. That's the gold water in me, man, coming out. That's the gold water saying, okay, I got to go hunt squirrels and apparently shave gold nuggets off of bars and trade with people back to my libertarian roots. No, I'm just kidding. I like to kid. I like to joke around. But so you got a family or anything?
I do. Yes, sir.
Continue.
I do. Yeah, it's a long, drawn-out story. I did have a wild hair when I was younger. I was married at the age of 20 in Las Vegas with a woman that I'd known for a couple of weeks, and we spent 5 years together.
Good for you.
It was, you know, a tough marriage, but I wouldn't change it for the world because I have a beautiful 19-year-old daughter now, and she is definitely my world. Love her to death.
So that would make you just
anything
shy.
Good and bad happens for a reason.
That just makes you just
I
shy of 40.
I firmly believe that.
Is that right? Just shy of 40?
Yes, sir. Okay. Well, no, I'm 41.
41. Okay. So 19. Yes, sir. All right. Yeah, I forgot to carry the one. My bad. Okay. good for you, though, by the way. You know, a lot of people, they don't know how to, you know, quick marriages and impulse decisions. Good. I love it. I think it's great. You know, live life. And you know what? If it doesn't work out, hey, that's okay.
I didn't. But, you know, through that, I met my wife now. And
okay.
We have three more boys together. So, I have four children of my own, and then we just brought on my ex-wife's two children that are not mine. They just came to live with us 3 days ago.
You know, they stream stuff on the internet now if you guys need distraction around the house. Holy crap. How many kids you got?
So now we have six kids here. My daughter's home from college for the next couple of weeks, so we have six kids.
I grew up Catholic, so the joke used to be always be, "What are you, Catholic?" But as I get more west, I realize you gotta ask Mormon too. So a joke.
Well, you know, it's funny. My wife's family—they're Mormon.
Okay, there you go. All right, and I'm
so that is the joke. Yes.
Well, there we go. A lot of times these jokes are correct too when it comes to the Catholic and Mormon joke. Well, we're the ones with the big families, you know. I'm Catholic,
yes,
like I said, so I can joke like that. But so you got the six kids and. Boy, that's what are the ages again?
So my youngest son, he is 2 years old, and we call him the terrorist because if he had been born first, we wouldn't have had any more. But we've got him. I've got a 4-year-old boy, and then a 12-year-old boy, and then my daughter's 19, and then my ex-wife's children that are now living with us. So the one is 14, and the other one's 8.
I think it's really important to have teenagers in the house if you're in leadership. I really mean that. I totally mean that because a couple of years ago, I was in Gillette, Wyoming, and I was sitting on a panel with actually two people from Colorado. And it was when it was probably 2017 or 18. It was when they were going through some of that issues that they were going through with the current governor.
Yes, sir.
And they were trying to argue with me on this panel. It was like an organic debate argument that, you know, talk radio and television was a way to reach kids. And I looked at them and I said, if you're not texting my kid on Instagram or YouTube, you ain't reaching them, you know, and that type of, or Twitch. And I think I named Twitch too. And I remember thinking, going, boy, that's really out of touch because my kid he calls a newspaper a homeless blanket. I mean, that's how out of touch they are with this old media. So I think I believe it's important to stay connected with the youth, especially now more than ever with the way technology is changing so fast.
Yes, sir.
And with the way that our threats are being done. I mean, you know, we talked about gun laws and, you know, this is sex trafficking month. And so, you know, the next generation of sex trafficking is happening online right now, and they're junior high kids. So junior high kids are the ones being lured in 3 to 4 years of sex trafficking. So that way these people can get trust in them for 3 to 4 years and get them right when they're 18 out of the house, or lure them away when they're 16. These are real problems. And
yes,
I mean, we didn't have that when we were growing up. I mean, jeepers, I don't know about you, but I used to go across the train tracks over a river on a Tuesday like it was no big deal. Now they'd have the National Guard coming in, you know. So times have changed a little bit, but I do want to ask you about connection to elected officials, connection to just the youth and just the direction, especially with the technical world, whether it's everybody's got a phone in their hand or, you know, Moore's law of big data, you know, the processor and the size of the speed going twice as fast, because you're in the solar industry, you might understand that a little bit. But talk to me about connection, because that's a big deal in today's election years.
Yes, sir. So, you know, it's unfortunate that social media is a big part of any campaign these days. And I'm not a huge fan of social media. I have it. I utilize it, and every now and then I do find it, you know, sponging away my life, and I have to put it away and then, you know, rethink my life choices for that moment. But I'm not very good at the posting portion and keeping people apprised to my life and what's going on. My communication skills are lacking in that department for sure. But that's really the best way that I have found to be able to reach the constituents of the area, to be able to get information out there in a manner of where people have subscribed to you. And, you know, if they want to see your updates, they're going to see it immediately the second that you put it out there. It's also one of the most cost-effective means for, you know, staying in contact or connecting with the people. The other means of television, radio, publications, things along those lines, even if they are digital and online, you have to have specific subscriptions generally to those, unless they have taken the time to integrate themselves into the very specific platform, whatever it may be, of that social media. So social media has done a great job of bringing all of that together and being able to present it to you on one site. So mm-hmm. It definitely has some advantages there. Outside of that, the standard interviews, things, you know, like this, website is a place that we're able to get information out. And then just good old-fashioned networking, going out, meeting the people, pounding the pavement, you know, as they'd say.
Did you say you have a website?
Yes, sir.
Wait, what's that website?
It's ElijahForWeld.com.
ElijahForWeld.com. ElijahAh. Correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Correct.
And then how about Facebook? You on Facebook or LinkedIn or anything?
I am on Facebook. I set up my very first Twitter and Instagram page here this past week.
We still are not on Instagram yet. Good for you, man.
No, I held out as long as I could.
I'm in the same camp as you as a social media. Like, we're more of shouters than engagers. And, you know, we do a lot of just shouting. And it's a lot of it is just, I just don't think people care about me personally, what's going on with me personally. So I like promoting other people and their ideas. And I like sharing my ideas and things like that. But, like, I don't think anybody cares that I'm having, you know, a salad for lunch. I just, it's.
Yes, sir.
And most of it is, I don't really want anybody to know, I guess. I don't know. But,
you know, I'm right there with you. It's, I find it awkward. I'm the worst at promoting myself. I'm decent in sales, but when it comes to myself and trying to, you know, put myself out there, like, it's difficult. It's definitely a different style of sales all the way together.
Well, no, it's hard because it's so manufactured that.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's the issue is that, there's times where you just have to figure out a way to get it past that hurdle of, oh, this is fake. It's manufactured. And for other people, it's not. You know, that's who they are. And that's who, you know, that's what they're all about. And there's other people that they just take the football, hand it to the ref, and walk back to the huddle. There's, you know, not there's everybody has to spike, you know.
Right. Some people are very natural. You know, natural politicians are good at doing that. For me, it's very awkward. It's forced, and you can tell sometimes for sure. I have no problem talking to people, but you know, about subject matter and whatnot. But when it comes to, you know, just selling me personally, that's a difficult task altogether.
People always say to me, like, "Oh, are you against social media?" Absolutely not, because that's where people are. And so if people are there, you got to be there too. And I always tell people, get a Facebook page and get a LinkedIn, get a, you know, for me, eventually I'm going to get an Instagram. But the other problem is, and I'm sure you're starting to find this out, each audience is a little different. So like for me, if I'm going to post something on LinkedIn, it's going to be different on Facebook and then completely different on Instagram. Well, that's a full-time job, man. That's, I mean,
oh, it is. Absolutely.
I mean, you got to come up with three. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I've learned from our businesses just in marketing that, you know, we had to hire people for those positions because it is a full-time job.
It is. I mean, because you got to come up with the creative, and then it takes the time to actually implement it. And then also you got to come up with the graphics too. So just something as simple as that is a three-legged stool just for the basic post. Just for basic Facebook post, you got a three-legged stool. Just like in the solar panel, you got a three-legged stool of oil and gas, coal, and solar. So there we go. That's a little bit of a full circle there. But anyway, we'll try. Circle, triangle. There we go. We got them. Any squares involved? That's just me. There we go. Bunch. All right. So let's wrap her up here. What's kind of your elevator pitch? Your quick version of what do you want people to know? What's the quick version at a cocktail party that you tell people that you're running for and why?
Oh,
and if you don't know it, you better come up with it.
I don't have that. Once again, I'm not a self salesman. I don't have an elevator pitch at least as of yet. I do have a campaign manager, and that's something that we have not worked on. I guess that might be something we do need to look at. But
well, if you'd like, you can get the stopwatch out and make sure it's under make sure it's under 2 minutes. But or you can go stand in the elevator and push, floor five and try to get the pitch done and by floor five. That's kind of the idea is a 30-second to a 2-minute pitch because not everybody has time.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's something to work on, man.
I was going to say, just to, I am who I am. I'm a quiet person. I'm more of a listener. I never jump into a situation without trying to do my best to understand what it is and engage all sides. To that token, I am a supporter of oil and gas plus the renewables industry. I believe in ag. Definitely a Second Amendment supporter, and I'm a big fan of money. So... yeah, that's me in a nutshell right there.
There we are. Well, I appreciate the time today. And, if you have anything that you need during the campaign, feel free to lean on us during the run, man.
All right. Well, I appreciate it, sir. Thank you for your time.